So you know, probably like a lot of other people, maybe people who listen to this podcast, including yourselves, I occasionally like to do some PC gaming. So today I decided I would do some PC gaming. Microsoft Flight Simulator. Big fan.
Obviously. Oh, excellent choice. Excellent choice. I'm not a flight sim user, but I'm glad it exists. Whenever I see a TikTok, it makes me happy. I'm like, I don't have the patience to play this, but I'm glad somebody else does.
Honestly, it's the only game I play. Partly because it takes about 10 minutes to start up. But, you know, like, we've been PC gaming now for like 30 years.
Don't say it like that.
That's depressing.
But it's true. We've been gaming on the PCs since the 1900s.
Depressingly, I'm still playing a lot of the same games I was playing back then as well.
You know, but we've seen a lot of PC games. We've seen a lot of technology. You know, the kind of games we play now, like when we were kids, we could only dream of like the stuff that we see now in PC gaming. But there's some parts of PC gaming that are just a total nightmare after 30 years of trying. I decided to make a log of what actually happened on my PC gaming adventure this afternoon.
Oh, this should be good.
You ready? Okay. So, fired up the PC, clicked on Microsoft Flight Simulator, and it just sat there. Nothing happened.
Oh. Is this a Steam game, by the way?
No, I got it from the Microsoft Store.
That's your own fault, then.
But why?
But why would I want to run Steam as well as all the other stuff?
Well, you're running the Xbox Live thing as well.
No, I turned all that off.
Yeah, but it's still launching through.
No, it's not. Well, Xbox it is, but it's not.
Crap, isn't it?
Right. Anyway, I am from the old school where it's like, I don't want any programs running that don't need to be running. I don't want Steam running. So anyway, the computer froze, like hard freeze. So I was like, okay. Restart, you know, like hard press the power button, restart. Okay, so I restarted and then clicked on Microsoft Flight Simulator and it went, you know, popped up and went, oh, you're not signed in to Xbox. So I don't know what you want me to do. I can't do this. Oh, well, can I maybe sign in to Xbox? Don't know, mate. There's no network connection. What do you want me to do? So I, you know, went to the network settings, joined my other network, and then it was like, oh, yeah, this is fine. Yeah, this is cool. Yeah, I love this. Love this network. Anyway, so finally got it all up and running. And, you know, I play in VR. So I got the headset on. And the picture is a bit shaky and a bit blurry and not really going all that well. And then it just freezes. You know, I'm just like, I don't have time to do this again. So I just went, all right, turn off the PC. I'll do this later. I'll do it tomorrow. So got on with the rest of my day. And then earlier this evening, I thought, I've got time. I'll do some PC gaming. Right. So start up the PC. Clicked on Microsoft Flight Simulator. Whole PC froze again. Like it just hard freeze. Reset. Okay, grind. Okay. Booted it up. Put it in. You know, clicked on Microsoft Flight Simulator and it said, excuse me, could you put the disc in, please?
See, which version were you using? Flight Sim 95.
I don't have a disc. This is 2025. I don't have a disc. I bought it on the Microsoft Store to use on my Microsoft account on Microsoft Windows, and everything was done digitally. I don't have a disc.
Does your PC tower have a DVD drive?
Of course it doesn't.
Good. I'm glad that you said that. That makes the statement of insert the disc even better.
Can you put a disc like, in?
I'm open to suggestions on how we do this.
So I was like, what am I going to do? You know, so I quit Flight Simulator, opened Flight Simulator and said, can you put a disc in, please? Well, no, I can't put the disc in. And then said, oh, I can't do N. There's no network connection. You know, why, sir? You know, what do you want me to do? I don't have a network connection. Okay, so I joined the other network. Oh, I got network connection, yeah. So it finally booted up. Great. Okay. Got into Flight Sim, put the VR headset on, press a few buttons, you know, get the camera angle set up, PC crashed. You know, the VR crashed, Flight Sim crashed. Okay, that's fine. I'm a man of large patience. So I started it back up again, got into VR. I was like, ah, everything is looking, we're looking really good. This looks great. And I have an add-on where you know, you basically speak to a virtual first officer where you say stuff like, let's start setting up, or turn on engine one, or, you know, stuff like that.
This is next level nerd.
Oh, it is brilliant. When it works, it's great. Anyway, so, you know, I have a little trigger on the joystick that goes, you press the button and then you say what you want to say, and then it processes what you say, and then, you know, the virtual pilot says, yeah, no problem, whatever. The mic stopped working.
Did you struggle to get an A320 started from cold and dark?
No. Microsoft Flight Simulator prevented me from getting an aircraft into from cold and dark to ready to taxi. So
are we 2 days into this so far and you haven't left the ground?
Oh, I haven't even.
Worse than EasyJet.
I haven't even switched the batteries on yet at this point. Yeah. Anyway.
Grandpa was still hooked up.
Anyway, that's as far as I got. And then I managed to switch it over to like button control rather than voice control. Got the plane started. It's time for Vocast. That's enough. Anyway, so that was my Flight Sim adventure. All in all, I say I probably spent a good hour at it today and managed to push the plane back, and that was about it. But, you know, it got me thinking, you know, we've been PC gaming for 30 years. Why is it still terrible?
my recent experience, I won't do it in a log form as you just did, but I spent 2 days trying to get the Battlefield 6 beta working before I gave up, because it requires you to go into the BIOS and change a bunch of settings, but depending on which BIOS version you had, the settings wouldn't be there until you activated it. And you know that thing where you're like, I need to fix this.
Yeah.
To fix this, I need to fix that.
Yeah.
And to fix that, yeah. I need to fix that thing.
Yeah.
To fix that. And by that time, I was like 2 days into it. I'm like, you know what? I stopped caring about this a long time ago.
Yeah.
And also, in my grown-up life, I don't have time for that. I've got things to do. The washing needs to go out. I never thought I'd say that at any point in my life, but the washing needs to go out. That's more important than this Battlefield beta. And the dogs need walked, and that needs dealt with. And so I gave up on the Battlefield beta and I went to play Le Mans Ultimate, which is a great game, by the way. Really enjoy Le Mans Ultimate. But I got a VR headset on, and there is nothing worse than a VR headset where it stutters. And it, like, it's smooth 60 frames a second, and then it just does a stop and then goes. And I wouldn't say I get motion sick easy, although the people at Bedford Autodrome would disagree with me when I threw up behind the porter cabin. But it does give you that kind of weird motion sickness, doesn't it? Where you just go stop because you're doing 200 mile an hour down the Mulsanne, and then suddenly you're not. And then you are again. Like, I wouldn't say I felt motion sick, but I felt uncomfortable. And at that point, I was like, I could go and dig around like the race department forums or Reddit or something like that. And there'll be an answer for this somewhere. But I don't have time. And it turns out I don't care enough to solve it. And now that I'm older, I understand console gaming. Because if I just turn a PlayStation on and press go, firstly, it'll say you've got a 90 gigabyte download to do. Come back tomorrow. And then you come back tomorrow and then it will actually work. So why is it different? It's I feel like sometimes it's difficult because they like it.
I mean, I tried to play iRacing this evening and there was a 70 gig update that I needed to do. But it's installed on a fairly small SSD and it needed more space to install than I had. So I had to clear all that. I got rid of REM Sports because I haven't touched that since the first time I tried it, because it was a dog egg then. did it, went in, realised it's week 13 and there's nothing worth racing. So I just went back to IndyCar Racing 2. With force feedback, it's great.
Do you know what somebody should do? Somebody should take all those amazing old PC games like IndyCar Racing 2, GP2, and port them to a console where you don't have to mess with them. You could download it from the PlayStation Store or whatever. I don't know how you get games. I'm presuming there's a store. You know, actually, you know what I want? I want them on the Switch. Because I don't even want to sit on my couch and like lean over at the TV and do it. I want to lie back in bed and play Grand Prix Racing 2 by Microprose on a Switch.
You can do it on a Steam anybody... Deck.
I could actually. No, because then you then you're just got the same problems of a PC, but in your hands. Like, so instead of a mouse and keyboard, you're then hamstrung by a silly little controller, which for a game is fantastic. But can you imagine trying to diagnose why this PC game is not running using a D-pad?
That just going into Notepad and editing a JSON file.
It's not even a JSON file. That's far too modern. This is before JSON files, because this is pre-JavaScript. They're .ini files. Oh, I don't miss PC gaming.
The force feedback configuration for IndyCar Racing 2 is just a .ini file. And to select the device that you want the force feedback to be applied to, you have to type in the device as it appears in Windows Controller exactly.
I see no problems with that type of user interface. In fact, I feel that that's how modern phones should be. As a software developer, I dislike the idea of an icon that you tap on to launch an app. I think you should have to type in the racing line and then press enter, and then it will launch your app.
C:\cd\
Yeah, yeah. I was just going to say, Dave, do you want like a command line phone app?
Yeah, but Neil's had a drive letter. We're Mac OS, man. We don't do drive letters in Mac OS. You just do names or something. I still don't know how Mac OS stuff works. But that's exactly what I want. I want DOS as the latest. You know, Apple just launched the Liquid Glass, or whatever. We're quickly turning this into a tech podcast, by the way. Sorry to everybody who's listening. Apple just launched Liquid Glass or whatever. I want the opposite. I want Liquid Command Line, where it's just DOS, but it's just a little bit fancy looking.
You know what? There's probably
too much like work for me.
There's probably some phone made out of China or made in China that is exactly that. It just, you just boot it up and you just get a cursor. You know. Do you want to run the OS?
To be fair.
Yeah, yeah.
So what do you want to argue about first? Do you want to argue about Max Verstappen first? Or do you want to argue about McLaren team orders first?
The McLaren team orders thing is such as nothing. And okay. The column inches it has generated for being an absolute nothing.
Okay, before we get into it then, I want to ask each of you the following question. If Neil, if you were the boss of McLaren, would you have asked him to switch?
Yes.
Dave, would you have asked him to switch?
Maybe. I probably wouldn't have, but having seen it, I'm like, oh yeah, that's a good call, actually.
Neil, why would you?
Because it wasn't Lando's fault. The team hamstrung him by mistake. It's only fair that they make it up to him. Oscar wasn't challenging him for the second place, really.
Is a slow pit stop not part of racing?
It is, but they were in a position where they could make it right without it being a massive deal.
But at what point do they draw the line and say, no, we won't switch them around in this instance?
Well, if Lando would run over his crew, then I'd have been a little more reluctant to say they'd done the right thing, but he didn't. It was the front wheel didn't go on properly.
I think there's a... For me, there's an even simpler explanation on why it was okay. In that, so it was the second stop that went wrong. Regardless of driver, the second stop went wrong. The team's choice was to pit Lando first. That was what the team wanted to do. And Lando made the call, if there's not going to be an undercut, pit Oscar first, because that'll protect him from Charles getting an undercut. Lando made the call to put Oscar first to protect Oscar for the team. And that, to me, switches it around. Because
what?
The team were
no,
like,
he didn't. He absolutely did not. No, he wanted Oscar to pit first in the hope that there'd be a safety car, because the longer that they left it and got a safety car, they were all waiting until like the last possible minute in the hope that there would be a safety car, because if Lando didn't pit, safety car, then, you know, he's into the pits, he's out of the pits, he's ahead of Max, he wins the race. He had no interest. He would rather that Oscar finished P45.
He was never ahead of Max. That was never happening. You could have given Lando 4 free pit stops. He was never going to be ahead of Max.
Oh, but I mean, it was what, 20 odd seconds at the end? 22 seconds.
Max was almost an entire green flag pit stop ahead. Never mind a safety car pit stop ahead.
At this point, Max was still behind, wasn't he? Because the McLarens hadn't pitted.
By a couple of seconds. Like he was within. There was even with a safety car.
Lando he was on was it, but you know, McLaren would have pitted Lando on softs.
Lando made the call to switch the cars, and there was a mention of Oscar being closer to Charles than Oscar was to
Think Charles was a threat at all. He was a threat in turn one and turn two, and that was about it.
He was more of a threat to Oscar than Lando was to Max. Max was in another league.
I'd agree with that. Yeah, I'd agree with that. But I don't think that Lando wanted to pit Oscar first for the good of Oscar. They were just hoping for a safety car.
He made the call to switch them. The team then agreed. And also, we have been here before. We have done this before in Hungary.
Yes.
Where certain things happened in the team which unnecessarily screwed a driver, and the team made it right. Lando had a bit of a strop, but he did it. And Oscar had a bit of a strop, and he did it.
Yeah, he did it immediately rather than 10 laps later.
That doesn't matter. Like, it's points of points.
Yeah, he did it. Yeah, he still, you know, they both still did it. But, you know, now that each of them has done this once, do you reckon we'll see it again?
Yeah, because I don't think it's just a balance out thing. I think this is just how McLaren operate. I think this is part of the whole papaya rules thing. Team comes first and then driver second. And if the team screw up and move one person in front of the other for whatever reason, then they will make it right. And I think that's okay. I don't think this is the same as, for example, the Schumacher years where nobody was even allowed to race Michael. And they were doing team swaps to benefit Michael right at the start of the season, things like that.
Yeah, like Austria 2002. It wasn't a situation like that at all.
Exactly. And kind of ironically, like 1989, it screwed them, where if they hadn't been moving Irvine out of the way, they might have won a world championship. But, you know, although I don't think Ferrari would have been particularly happy if their first world champion in 20 years was Eddie Irvine for some reason.
I don't think Michael would have been very happy if Ferrari's first world champion since 79 was Irvine.
Yeah, exactly. And given that Irvine then got booted at the end of the year, I don't think that the rest of Ferrari would have been very happy with
it. Sacked for getting too close.
Also, the phrase Eddie Irvine world champion just doesn't quite sit right.
Oh, I don't know. I'm well up for that. Looking in the benefit of hindsight, that's not any more insane than Jacques Villeneuve, world champion, given how his career subsequently and his opinions on the situation.
Jacques Villeneuve is a much better driver than Eddie Irvine. And I'm saying this as somebody who is a Northern Irishman. And I, you know, it's not that I know Eddie Irvine, but, you know, I sort of feel morally bound to defend Eddie Irvine where possible. But
No. As a non-Irish person, I would definitely put Eddie Irvine up there with somebody who probably could have won a world championship in Jacques Villeneuve's situation.
I think I could have won a world championship in Jacques Villeneuve's position.
He really had a good go at not winning that championship, didn't he?
Did his best.
As a Scotsman, I have to say David Coulthard would have done a better job in that car than Jacques Villeneuve did as well.
I think I'd have to agree. Okay, just to get back to the McLaren, I would like to ask each of you a question. Would you agree that it was definitely easier for Oscar to do the right thing and move over, given that he has a large championship lead?
Yeah, it does make it easier, doesn't it? The reliability is so high now that I don't think Oscar's expecting a DNF. So all he needs to do is what he's been doing all year.
So do you,
even if he gets a DNF, he's still ahead in the championship, regardless of what Lando does.
So do you think that if they had been, say, 2 points difference in the championship. If Lando had been 2 points ahead in the championship, would Oscar have moved over?
Oh, that's a good one. I don't know, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't know either. That's what I want to kind of talk
thesis. I don't think Oscar would know until he was in that position.
Yeah, and I also think it depends on when it is at Monza. Maybe there's surprisingly a high number of races still to go, but you do that later in the year to equalize it. Probably not.
Still,
but it also
go.
Raises the question: would McLaren actually ask for that if it was like two races to go and that had happened? Would McLaren ask for it? I don't think either driver would do it, to be honest. If it was like two races to go and switch them round,
no, I'd have.
I think
to
McLaren might ask.
I think they would ask.
I don't know whether Oscar would or Lando if roles were reversed.
Does it become a separate conversation after McLaren win the championship? Constructors, I mean, sorry. Once that one's done, do you just be like, right, the team's done its bit. We've won one championship. So it's now, there's now no papaya rules. It's just do whatever.
I think that there's an optics side to that question, that it doesn't look good if they do that in round 23 or whatever, to, you know, to make that call.
I'd agree. It's kind of a weird one, really, because I think as fans, we put a lot more emphasis on the Drivers' World Championship, kind of forgetting about the teams quite often. But quite often, the teams are focusing on the Teams' World Championship, but, you know, fair enough. So I can envision a situation where after the Constructors is definitely wrapped up, you just go, right, it doesn't matter now. There is no team orders, regardless of who makes mistakes. It's now you guys just go and do what you want. I can see that being a thing.
Just don't crash into each other.
Even at that point, even if they crash into each other, I think they've got such a monumental lead that you could actually take them out of a couple of races and Max still couldn't make up the gap, because the gap's just huge now, isn't it?
I mean, they have basically won the Constructors' Championship and they have basically won the Drivers' Championship. But yeah, I think certainly coming into the last couple of races, there probably won't be any team orders, but I think it will be very much let them race and just no hold.
I'm going to do a reverse question of, do you think there would have been this much fuss over it had it been the other way around and had they asked Lando to move over for Oscar?
Yes, because Lando's fan base would have then kicked in.
Does Lando have a fan base? Because the internet would tell me he is the most hated driver ever in the history of any motorsport, including Kyle Larson.
I'm just
There's
glad it's not Max
but
anymore.
A small, fervent group of them.
Don't worry, we'll come to Max.
I think Max is now coming out of his villain era, which is good.
Based on what we've seen at Monza, I don't think he has. This is what actually surprised me, is there was more fuss about McLaren radio than there was about the driving standards of Turn 1 at Monza. I have to admit that.
It was very public lobby, wasn't it?
It was a little bit, wasn't it? It's before we get to Max, I will say I am surprised at how much fuss there is over the McLaren team orders thing. I'm not shocked at the internet, because this is what the internet does. The internet is outraged at everything. I am shocked at several reputable media outlets posting very clickbaity titles about how terrible it is. And I'm shocked at that.
And they've been feeding into the whole Lando versus Oscar thing and building it up. So they're going to keep doing that because it's going to keep generating clicks for them.
Yeah, I mean, it's the first time that, that I can remember in a while where there's been two championship protagonists and one has been asked to move over for the other. You know, this is very different to, an early 2000s Ferrari era or, you know, Verstappen-Perez kind of era, you know.
When was the last time two championship contenders were asked to move? Well, the only thing I can think of is 1996 Melbourne, when Villeneuve's engine was on its way out, but that was different because that was genuinely going to blow itself to
bits. It was, and also, you know, they knew they were ahead, but like that wasn't, they weren't even, nobody had any points at that point. It was
it was race one, and I think we would all have made this exact same call.
Absolutely.
I can't think of any.
Maybe
other
Melbourne
time.
97, but that wasn't team orders, that was an agreement between Micah and Coulthard, wasn't it?
I really, I mean,
were they really championship contenders in 97? I suppose we didn't know because it was round one.
Yeah.
And McLaren were first and second. So yes, they were actually at that point. Yeah, you're right.
I don't remember in recent, somebody probably will remember this. Somebody probably will have an answer.
Sim.
Yeah, I was going to say, Sim, write in. Just write in to the Vocast program, and let us know. Or if anybody else knows, please write into the Vocast show.
Actually, Sim's going to correct us on something. Melbourne would have been 98, wouldn't it?
Which one? The McLaren one?
Yes, because Hakkinen's first win was end of 97. Yes. So McLaren were title contenders.
Yeah, so that's actually the closest we've got, I think, is Melbourne 98. You know, and even that doesn't count.
Also, you know, like because they're, you know, the entire year has been at McLaren, you know, has been focused on McLaren. Like they've been running away with everything. Yeah, there's going to be more spotlight in them. Nobody cares if Williams do this. Nobody cares if Alpine do this.
I think you'll find Alex Albon really cared this weekend. As did Carlos Sainz, really cared.
I mean, if Albon was asked to move out of second place, I think a lot of people would care, but they're not in second. So.
Yeah, but you know, this is let's put it in sort of more normal perspective. It's for 11th and 12th. If you're Alpine. Nobody cares.
Yeah, but it was way more entertaining, the Williams situation, because everybody was unhappy and it was quite spectacular. It's actually kind of funny. It's like McLaren managed to swap two title contenders between themselves and not have too much drama between themselves, where Williams couldn't achieve the same thing for a minor position without pissing off everybody. It was quite an impressive display on how to not manage it.
Have you noticed that Alex Albon is very grumpy on the radio these days?
Yeah, but have you noticed he's saying the same things that drivers have been saying at Williams for about a decade now, or longer?
Yes, there is that, yes.
This is it's been a constant thing in Williams' kind of history, actually, long before the current regime, when you had Frank Williams and Patrick Head, and they didn't listen to any drivers, because, fuck it, you can just replace them.
Head was famous for it.
Yeah, exactly. But they've somehow internalized that, because I know we all laugh at Lance Stroll, because he's Lance Stroll. But he said it quite a lot on the radio. It's like, you are not telling me what's going on in a race. You are not giving me help here. Kubica said the same thing. Sorokin said the same thing. Well, this might be a Sorokin problem. And now we're seeing that they finally got good drivers and good management. But Albon's saying the same thing that's been said for decades of, you're not assisting me here. You're not listening to me here. Why don't you listen to me? It's almost Charles Leclerc level anger at Ferrari at times, isn't it? This is a fundamental problem in Williams, in that the drivers and the team are very disconnected during the race.
I think a lot of Albon's frustration as well stems from the fact he is driving spectacularly this year. He really is. And he's not really getting anything for it. I mean, yeah, I think he alone this season has scored more points than Williams had from 2018 up until the end of 2024.
It's because they stopped using spreadsheets.
And I think he knows he's driving really well, and it's really frustrating for him that he isn't getting the podiums. I mean, he's still never had one. Has he? No, he hasn't.
Is that
hasn't.
A stat? Has Alex Albon never been on the podium?
What, really? Even during his Red Bull days?
I'm gonna have to Google this now.
Surely
podiums,
he's been on the podium.
He's been on the podium twice. Yeah, don't come on here with false stats. Sim will get angry.
It's 2020. It doesn't count. That was a weird year.
Yeah, that would have been his Red Bull years then, yeah.
Yeah.
He's one
Tuscany
of those ones,
Grand
actually.
Prix and Bahrain.
The more you look back at various drivers' Red Bull careers, the more you realise it's like some of them probably should not have been sacked at the point they were, given that everything that happened after that.
Here's a question while we're talking about Williams then. Dave, you've been quite critical about James Viles in the past. Do you still stand by your criticism of James Viles?
No, I think I might have said on an earlier episode, if it made it into the edit, then he has proven me quite wrong if he is getting stuff done there. I still think the criticisms that we've just made on this episode stand of the
totally
driver
valid.
Seem to be very disconnected from the pit wall. However, as a whole, that team has made massive strides. It was something I was thinking about during the race, actually. It's like when you looked at it, like Sauber making massive strides forward before they become Audi, but Hülkenberg obviously getting podium, Bortoletto had a great weekend at Monza, Williams making massive strides forward. Somehow they're not always getting the results they seem to deserve, but they are making strides forward. Who's going backwards? Because if these drivers are going forwards, there's got to be somebody going backwards.
I was
going
to say Haas, but they're always fairly crap anyway. And Alpine, I mean, Alpine starts off the season with the worst car.
Alpine seem to be going backwards from the back, which is quite impressive. but the other one would be Liam Lawson. I was about to say Racing Bulls, but it's not, because Hadjar's having great times. It's just Liam Lawson.
No, he hasn't been quite as bad recently. Do you need me to pull up his results?
Can we have a look at Monza, what just happened? I'm prepared to be wrong on this one.
Wouldn't be the first time.
But didn't he qualify last and then finish as near as makes no difference last? He maybe beat some Alpines.
I paid so little attention to the Italian Grand Prix. I know the top three. Oh, no, I could probably work out who came fourth. It was Leclerc, wasn't it?
Here's another one that wildly varies and is sometimes at the back and sometimes not. It's Aston Martin. Like when that car works, it's actually fine. And when it doesn't work, it is spectacularly bad. Kind of ironically, when it does work, it seems to suit Lance better than it suits Fernando. And then you end up with Lance ahead of Fernando. I think he might still have more points than Fernando does as well this season.
Fernando's had a lot of retirements, though. Some his fault.
Some his fault. He has had many a strop as well.
That's just standard Fernando things, isn't it?
It is a bit. But yeah, I feel like there's a lot of teams that we're noticing are having great years. But there's a lot of teams that are having pretty bad years. Alpine being the obvious one.
Alpine,
Gasly just signed a contract extension, didn't he? Which doesn't feel like the wisest move in the world.
But going back to Aston, I think the reason they have so many hit and miss performances, like there's races where the car really does look properly racy, and then there's other races where it looks like it's a shopping trolley. I think it's because they don't know what it is that makes the car work. Yeah. They've just done stuff, it's worked, they've not really known what it is they've done to it that's made it work, and then it doesn't work at the next track. Despite them not changing
it
anything.
Does seem to be very, very track dependent. You know, you think about in Hungary when they were brilliant, you know, when both of them were, you know, running surprisingly well. Both of them, I think, did okay in Zandvoort as well. You know, again, both sort of tight, twisty tracks. But you bring it to somewhere like Monza, again, it is, like you said, a shopping trolley is probably the best example or best word to describe that. So, I mean, they're having a tough year. But, you know, again, I don't think any team has had a shocking year.
Alpine.
Apart from
Ferrari.
Ferrari are in a weird one where they look like they've had a terrible year and somehow they're second in the Constructors' Championship. And
that's because their nearest efforts. Challenger is only scoring points with one car.
Yeah, the nearest challenger is Max Verstappen. But Alpine,
I thought you were going to say
come
George
on,
Russell, that, actually. So.
How can you look at Alpine and go, this has been a successful year? They got rid of their second driver who was not doing very well and managed to get somebody who is not doing very well and is toxic, which is quite impressive. I thought they'd got over their Fernando years, but no.
I clearly missed him.
And the one driver who is quite good there is also having a terrible year. There's no redeeming anything to the Alpine years.
There's been no redeeming thing about Alpine since they rebranded to Alpine. In fact, before that, when they were Renault and had Danny Ric, there was nothing really redeeming about them. They sort of got a little bit up the grid and then have just...
They got a couple of podiums. You know,
and then it's been shit ever since.
Yeah, I mean, now you're getting into, you know, probably chronic underfunding and poor decision-making and car company politics. And, you know, there's a whole bunch of reasons. You know, I think really, if I was Alpine, I'd be looking at, in fact, if I was any team, I'd be looking at McLaren and go, How have they risen from the GP2 engine days to having the Constructors' Championship sewn up by halfway through the year?
But that, how quick was McLaren's turnaround as well? Was it 22 or 23? I can't remember. There was one year where they were right at the back at the start, and then they introduced some upgrades, and suddenly...
Yeah, I think it was... it wasn't 20... What year is this? This is 25. 24. Yeah, maybe it was the start of 22. Could have been 23. Sim will know. When they launched the car and they said, we've missed a whole bunch of targets and we've really messed this up, but we've got a B-spec car coming later in the year and it's going to be quite good. And everybody went, yeah, right.
We've heard this one before.
Heard this one before. B-spec car going up the grid. Yeah, okay. Turns out they were actually quite serious about it, and they did actually manage to get quite far up the grid. Yeah, I mean, they've just really maximized the rule set more than anyone else now.
But I think in McLaren's case, they made some mistakes, but they were never completely clueless or badly run at any point. They've had tough times, and probably the toughest times are when they were badly run, when the end of the Ron days and the start of the Zach days and stuff like that, where there's the full changing of the regime.
The Martin Wishmarsh days.
Those were chaotic.
The MTC lake somewhere.
Yeah, those were chaotic because I think he was a lot more corrupt than what people think he was. But, you know, that's another topic for another day.
Are you suggesting that Martin Wishmarsh isn't a friend of the podcast, Martin Wishmarsh, then?
I'm suggesting that I wouldn't trust a single thing that comes out of his mouth at all. There's not many people who can tell a blatant lie on TV after we just seen the video evidence of what happened, and he sits there and goes, "No, that didn't happen."
Have you ever watched the BBC News?
It's almost Donald Trump levels of just audacity of, "Oh, just tell a lie, it'll be fine." But, you know, yeah, whatever, another topic. But during the Zach days, for example, they've never looked completely rudderless. It's always been like, "Oh, there's some mistakes, and it's not going well." But you've never looked at them and thought, they're really badly run. Whereas with Alpine, you kind of do, because it's being run, funnily enough, like a French Formula One team.
Okay,
quick
quiz then. Right, quiz time. So fastest buzzer first. Who is the current Alpine team principal?
Oh, I have no idea.
Neil.
It's not Flav, but is it? He's sort of de facto team principal?
No, but I want to know who's the guy... on paper that says, I am Alpine team principal.
Who cares?
I can't remember.
Okay.
No one cares.
Right. Okay. Next question, because I don't know the answer to that. Who is the Alpine technical director?
I have no idea. Nick would know this one.
Can you name any Alpine senior management / technical staff?
Flavio Briatore.
Yeah.
This is Team Flavio, and we know it's Team Flavio. He's not allowed to be in charge of anything, but he is in charge of everything. This is the kind of the ridiculous situation, isn't it, where he's not allowed to be a team principal in Formula One, but he's allowed to tell the team principal everything that he has to do. So he is he is de facto a team principal in that situation.
Well,
he actually has
the dream job, because he tells the team principal what to do, and if it all goes wrong, the team principal gets fired.
If it all goes right, he takes the credit.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of amazing.
He's worked that.
Have you ever seen that Martin Brundle meme where he turns around on the grid and Flavio's there and he's like, oh, hello, Flavio. That's how I feel the Renault garage would be, Alpine garage would be. If you just turn around and Flavio's there and you go, oh. that's how I feel with Alpine. But I also think it's like that doesn't work with what Formula One is today and what Alpine is today. It worked in Benetton. Benetton were not a factory team, even when they had Renault engines and all the rest of it. That was different. That was all back in private running days. And even when it became Renault in the early 2000s, we hadn't really bedded into the full idea of what a factory team was then. You know, Toyota and BMW really set what that was. But now it's different. It's very different to how it was at Flavio's last time he was successful. And between the last Flavio success and now, we've also had Crashgate and things like that. So I don't think Flavio is well suited to this world. And I think that's part of the problem that Alpine is going to have. Also because he's got a weird, rather abusive form of ADHD where he gets bored of drivers really quickly and sacks them. So Gasly's contract is not worth anything because Flavio is there.
But going back to the whole, what is a work, like Alpine not knowing what work team is, and going back to McLaren being not rudderless at any point apart from the end of the Ron days, this season I think will be one of my favourite middle fingers to Ron, because he said they cannot win if they're not a factory team. They will not challenge for a title if they're not a factory team, which is why he went for Honda. That's why he pushed for Honda. That's why the whole thing happened. And we know what a shambolic mess that was. They're now a customer team again, about to win it.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, I think part of that is Zach knows how to find money. And part of that is being able to go out and find sponsors. But part of that is selling the entire team, you know, making a fortune and then investing it in the team. You know, I mean, quite a few years ago, they sold off the MTC and now they just lease it back. You know, that team is now owned by Bahrain.
Yeah.
Isn't it? You know, and so they obviously they got quite a good chunk of cash from selling the team, which, you know, they have invested and now you're seeing the results of it. But what do you think is going to happen longer term? Obviously, you spend that money. You'd get a great car. You get yourself to, you know, the top part of the grid. What happens 5 years down the line?
You'll have to go on Wheel of Fortune again.
Again?
Do you not know the story?
No.
Oh, when Zach was really young, he went on Wheel of Fortune and won. I think he got about $3,000, and that's how he started racing.
Yeah, this is where his fortune came from. He started on Wheel of Fortune, and he wanted to actually be a racing driver, I think, and then try it and realize he's
too American.
I can't remember if he said he didn't enjoy it, or he realized quickly he wasn't going to be good enough, one or the other, or he was going to run out of money. And then he got into management. And was he a mechanic first?
Yeah.
Or something like that? Yeah, he worked his way up from the bottom. From a Wheel of Fortune win, which is kind of funny because, like, Ron Dennis was actually another one. He started as a mechanic and worked his way up to team principal. And then he would never talk about the fact that he was a mechanic because he was almost ashamed of it. And the difference between Zach and Ron, I guess, is Zach recognizes his heritage in the background, whereas Ron was like, no, I need to be above it. But yeah, Zach came from a Wheel of Fortune win. All the way to McLaren team principal and probably two world championships.
That is very American.
There's something else I need to mention, because otherwise Nick and Sim are going to tell us off. The de facto team principal at Alpine is Flavio Briatore after Oliver Oakes resigned. Flavio took over all of his duties. He's not allowed to be listed as the team principal, but he has all of the duties that the previous team principal.
So who is the
Flavio Briatore?
Who's the on
there
paper?
There is not one. There is not one. They
Did
have
they not find someone?
Steve Neil. No, they have Steve Nielsen as the managing director. Flavio does all of the duties of the team principal. And technical director is, of course, David Sanchez, which I did know, and I completely forgot he even existed, because he was ex-McLaren, I think.
Yeah, okay. I'm just reading here. Alpine's new team principal is Steve Nielsen, who was appointed in July 2025, following the departure of Oliver Oakes in May 25, and a period where Flavio Briatore served as de facto leader. Nielsen, the team's new managing director, will oversee the daily operations of the team and report to executive advisor, Flavio Briatore.
Exactly. So he is actually the MD by official job title. He is the managing director, not the team principal by job title.
That's great.
Yeah, according to Wiki, Flavio is team principal, which is nuts because I thought he wasn't allowed to be.
No, I think that was... he challenged that in the French courts and that got lifted.
Oh, it might have done. It might have got short and I forgot.
Yeah.
I'm not used to this level of corruption.
Ah, come on. You've been watching Formula One for long enough.
I know, but I've not been living in Formula One for long enough.
You've known Flavio Briatore since the 1990s. Have you ever heard of Michael Schumacher?
I know, but I think what's actually been surprising is when you start hanging around in motorsport paddocks, not that I've been in F1 paddocks, just to be absolutely clear there, you realize that everything is way more corrupt than what you even see on TV. It's remarkable. And then you listen to like Bring Back V10s and you hear some background stuff of stuff that you didn't really know about in the 90s, and you go, yeah, it was even more corrupt than I thought it was. Yeah. So like Formula One is just constantly surprising in how corrupt and dodgy it all is.
That's great, isn't it?
Is it time to talk about Max Verstappen turn one yet?
No, I think we've been talking for about 45 minutes.
No, I think it definitely
must
is.
Be the end of the podcast.
So it was my understanding that you may not force a car off the track.
Yes.
At all.
No, you missed the addendum line to that rule. It was written in invisible ink, but it's there. It's unless you're Max Verstappen.
So why is there not more fuss about that rundown to turn one than what there has been?
Because it happens so regularly, no one gives a shit anymore.
Can't be the only person who watched that and went, that is utterly unacceptable.
Come on, Scott, defend it. Go on, go on. I'm waiting.
So just for context, for those who haven't seen it, is like Monza has got quite a large amount of tarmac on the driver's right-hand side, or what used to be racing tarmac, but it's no longer racing tarmac. There's a white line there. I used to think that that was fair game. You could actually drive over that, but people have been penalized for driving over that in multiple series now. And that surprised me the first time it happened, because like I said, I thought it was fair game. But no, the white line there designates the end of the racetrack. So, okay, fair enough, that's the edge of the racetrack. And then on the rundown to turn one at Monza, Max Verstappen decided to turn right whilst Lando Norris was on his right-hand side and put Lando over that white line.
No, hang on. Hello.
Here we go. Here we go. Okay, Max Defense Force is here.
I'm going to transpose this scenario into a scenario that both of you will be very familiar with. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You're on the motorway.
Oh, God.
I frequently move over on people at 200 miles an hour on the motorway.
Just yesterday, I drove a Nissan Qashqai off the road. To be fair, Nissan Qashqai drivers, it could have done it itself. I don't know.
Okay, you are on the motorway. This is a three-lane motorway. Okay. In lane one, there's, I don't know, a lorry, whatever. In lane two, there is you in your road car of choice. In lane three, there is other driver in other car. And you're going down the motorway. And there's a sign that says, lane three closure in 200 yards. Lane three closure in 100 yards. If you're the person who is in lane three, your lane is about to disappear. What do you do? Do you just keep the foot in?
I have two issues with this. Firstly, it's not a motorway. Which is problem number one with this. And problem number two is Lando was not in lane three until Max put him in lane three.
No, but yeah. And so Max used all of the racetrack that he was entitled to use. Lando used
was
all
he?
Of the... Yes.
And didn't you yes. leave racing room?
Yes.
This is what I don't understand.
He left
turned right
room
into
because,
a car.
No, Lando
he
was still
He turned right
on.
Into a car that was on his right.
No, he defended
also,
the position.
The motorway analogy falls apart because there'd be a 50-mile-an-hour average speed check long before the lane closure.
Yes, there would. And of course, there would be nobody in this closed lane for about 10 miles.
So wait a minute. Are we saying it's okay to put a car off the road
and just turn them
in a straight line?
No, because he didn't put them off the road. They were alongside.
He did put them off the road.
No, they were alongside
each other.
No,
the white line is the edge of the road.
Okay.
White line is the edge of the road,
okay.
And Max turned right. Do you remember? I'm going way back, but we will all remember this. Do you remember when Michael Schumacher did this to Mika Hakkinen on the run up to the Kemmel Straight, the lap before Mika put the great pass on him, and everybody was outraged because he turned right into Mika and put him on the grass? And now suddenly we're going, it's okay. What? Because it's just a white line. And even Martin Brundle said, and I completely disagree with Martin Brundle on this one, that Lando ran out of road there. But he didn't.
He was run out of road.
Max put him off the road.
No, don't agree. So I'm watching it here. Yes, Max pushes Lando onto the piece of tarmac
runoff. Yes. There you go. That's it. That's not the racing line.
But that is still
racing surface.
But on lap one, that's fair game. That is still the racetrack.
That is a statement.
On lap one, that is still the racetrack.
That's not the racetrack.
Well, it is the racetrack. I mean, we have seen this many, many times where drivers will do this. Not just
the
Max.
White line designates the edge of the racetrack. Max put him off the racetrack into a situation where that car was about to be on the grass.
Well, and then it was Lando's decision to go onto the grass. He could have quite easily decided, I will bail out of this and I will not go on the grass.
Why should he bail out of it? He has been forced
off
the
track.
Road. So, why is he off the track?
Because someone shoved him off and didn't leave him a car's width.
So once again, we're going to go way back to something that I've said about 20 to 30 times this year. In any other series, this gets you a penalty. Why do we hold Formula One drivers to a lower standard? And I think there'll be a lot of people who haven't seen the thing that I'm about to reference to. We've seen an exact situation in the FIA European Karting Championship just this week, where one driver looked over at the other in a straight line and violently turned left into him. The difference was the other kart driver didn't move. That driver has received a penalty and a ban. But for Max Verstappen, it's okay.
Well, he didn't hit him.
He didn't hit him because the other driver took avoiding action to not have an accident. Max deliberately put another car off the road again, and no. Everybody just goes, ah, it's fine. But he did. Said it.
No, but he wasn't off the road. He was off what
was
you
off
have
the
decided
road.
Is the, race. The racetrack.
He was forced off the racing
but
search.
That's still
he
the,
is off the
that
road.
Is still the racetrack
right,
on lap one.
So let's put it this way. If I go over the tarmac at turn one, let's say, you know, I make the right-hander, don't make the left, and it's got all those bumps and mess on the inside of turn one. Am I off the road or not?
Yeah, you're off the road.
Yeah, there you go.
What's
because
the difference?
That's not the racetrack.
Yeah, but on lap one, turn one, do you get a penalty if you go across that and don't gain any positions?
Don't gain an advantage. You do get a penalty if you gain an advantage. Max gained an advantage because he put the car that was about to overtake him off the road so he couldn't be overtaken.
No, because the car did not overtake him. The car was not completely alongside. They weren't...
Putting a car off the road to avoid being overtaken has been penalised multiple times. Lewis Hamilton's a famous one for that. We've seen that at Spa where he skipped the circuit in order to keep a position.
Honestly, I was expecting whenever you were going to talk about Max Verstappen, I thought you were going to talk about not the run down to turn one, but the actual turn one incident, in which I have no defence for. because for me that was like, well, you know, he's pushed Lando into a place where Lando can either have an accident or not have an accident, and decided, well, I'll risk having an accident, I'll go on the grass.
Well, so what he's done then is he's made Lando avoid two accidents within about 13 seconds.
Well, that's fair enough.
but this is the problem again. On that, how come like Ollie Bearman got sorry not Ollie Bearman Carlos Sainz got a penalty for existing, whereas Max Verstappen has managed to almost cause two accidents in one, break multiple rules, and everybody goes, it's just fine, it's Max, all right, why is this okay, why is this fine?
Because Lando could have bailed out of it, that's why.
He shouldn't have to bail out of it.
But you're Max Verstappen.
You can't force another car off the track.
But this is how Max Verstappen races. His version
yes,
of
it is. Exactly.
Well, his version of racing is, we will have an accident unless you move. Now, we can debate all day whether
if you liken
think
that to Senna,
fair
I'm
or not. No,
you.
I'm not going to liken that there to Senna.
Oh, if you no longer go for a gap, you're no longer a racing driver.
I saw that in the tattoo earlier.
Yeah, we're not talking.
And I wish I hadn't.
Things I didn't want to see before dinner.
Oh, dear. Anyway.
I just think we've been saying, or certainly I've been whinging about this for years now, and certainly months on this podcast, that if you normalize this and say that this is okay, then you will see this becoming a problem in the lower series. And we've seen that exact thing in the FIA European Karting Championship. And I hate to say I told you so, but actually I don't hate to say I told you so. I told you so. That was a Max Verstappen move. And that comes straight from the top. When you have Formula One drivers doing that, and then you have future Formula One drivers below emulating it, you have a problem.
I have a question here. If it had been rule reversal, if Lando had been on pole and Max had been alongside him, do you think Lando would have done the same move?
No.
Just let him, just waved him through, yeah.
No, I think he'd have fought properly. I don't think Lando would have pushed him off the road, and I don't think he would have then skipped turn one and then had the audacity to be like, no, it's fine, I can keep this until the other
one. I think that the fact that the stewards and Lando didn't seem to pick up on this as being a major issue would suggest that it's not a major issue.
The stewards rarely pick up on Max Verstappen being a major issue.
Well, there was that time last year whenever it was a major issue. And
he drove into another car and they went, you know what? That's going to be the same penalty as somebody just skipping the track a little bit. That'll be fine. Nobody will complain.
Yeah, I mean, you can rewind to the Spanish Grand Prix podcast. You can hear that I have no defense for that whatsoever.
Max Verstappen committed crimes that other people have committed. For example, Michael Schumacher, 1987. They have been completely thrown out of world championships for it. And Max got a 10-second penalty. The Max penalties are continuously disproportionate to the rest of the grid. We've actually talked about this, where we've talked about penalties being a bit weird, and the one that always stands out is Max Verstappen. Or for some reason, Haas. But that's another discussion. It's always Max Verstappen. So the fact that Max was not picked up on it doesn't mean anything, because he is constantly the wild card. I think somebody needs to run a bit of a statistical analysis and work out how many times Max gets away with something compared to how many times Derek Warwick is the driver, Stuart. Because I don't think somebody whose last outing in a race car was 1998 at Donington Park in a Vauxhall Cavalier, Vectra, should really be the driver, Stuart. Especially when we've got Formula One champions kicking around, or good drivers, I know we slag them off, but people like Daniel Ricciardo, who are by far more suited to this role. Somebody needs to run some analysis on that, Sim.
That's great, isn't it?
So should we talk about turn one then, Scott, as you were expecting that?
Yeah, I was kind of expecting you to talk about turn one. Do you want me to play?
I don't think anybody was angry about that.
Incredibly Max move.
Do you want me to, do you want me to go defensive, or do you want me to not go defensive? For the sake of the podcast, I can go either way.
I think the fact that he gave it back makes it a non-issue, but you had to be told to give it back because he is a child. But he needs to be told what's right.
But he gave it back like pretty quickly. He was like, okay, fair enough. I think that, you know, okay, I'll suggest something here, that the turn one game of pushing somebody off the racetrack has become a bit of a game that certainly Max will play, and I think Lando will play it to an extent. Oscar, to an extent. You know,
I think you're projecting there in the hope to get some leeway for Max Verstappen, but I'm seeing no evidence of Oscar and Lando doing such things.
I mean, if you look at, say, Saudi this year, where Norris had to take to cutting the corner on the first lap because he was forced off, and he lost out because of it.
I should probably just go and watch all the starts again. I mean, although they all seem like such a long time ago now. I know that's not a very good defense, but it's actually true.
Whilst we're talking about penalties, can we talk about Carlos Sainz, who appears to have been penalized for being on a racetrack? And then after being told and then after Formula One drivers are told that any time they can come and speak to the stewards about penalties and driving standards, the stewards denied his request for a meeting and left the circuit.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. So the rules, not that I necessarily agree with the rules on this, but the rules are something like the driver's front wheels have to be alongside the other car's mirrors to be considered alongside. I don't necessarily agree with those rules, but if that's the way they're written, fine, that's the way they're written. Behrman wasn't even close. Like, don't get me wrong, I don't think Behrman was particularly at fault, but to blame Carlos for that one, I was like, by the rules that you've written, what Sainz did, he had the right to the corner.
I mean, the most outrageous one was the penalty that Carlos got in Zandvoort. That was just, you know, when,
Lawson drove into him. Yeah.
And he got the penalty. You know, and all the commentators and everybody just went, huh?
I think a great match made in heaven here would be Carlos Sainz in a Haas. Can you imagine the penalty points he would gather in just round one just from being at the circuit?
Carlos Sainz and Kevin Magnussen in the Haas team.
Oh, you're done. Can we get him as the driver, Stuart? It'd be chaos.
You get a penalty point, and you get a penalty point, and you get a penalty point.
So I believe that that puts, was it Behrmann or Carlos?
Behrmann's on 10.
Yeah, he's on 10.
Which for a rookie season, that's impressive.
So he got, was it three of them, or was it six of them at Silverstone for his crash under a red flag?
That still means he's picked up seven others.
It's good, isn't it? Well done, that man.
He's scoring the wrong points.
Speaking of penalties, I do think that I correct me if I'm wrong, that Valtteri Bottas has a penalty to serve.
He's got a five place
grid drop for his first race with Cadillac next year.
Because they don't clear after 12 months.
They do clear after 12 months, unfortunately.
They don't. It's been clarified. If it was license points, they clear. The penalty stands.
Does that mean Jenson Button
makes a comeback as well? He's got a penalty. Yeah.
This is possibly the longest you have been issued with a penalty to you have actually served the penalty.
It would be, but that also goes with the longest pit stop, which goes to Valtteri Bottas from his wheel not coming off at Monaco, and they had to ship it back to Brackley to disconnect it.
Although, really, the pit stop stopped when he got out the car.
No, because it stops when the wheel comes off. That's when a pit stop is complete, is when you can at least get the wheel off and go, yeah, that's fucked. So that got all the way to Brackley.
Yeah, that was good going. David, you're acting good in the racing lineup. I believe that a certain four-time Formula One world champion who may be Dutch might be racing in NLS this weekend.
What's funny is on Friday he has to sit an exam, an actual written exam, to get his first provisional racing license at Nürburgring, because that's how it works. Every single driver has to sit a professional.
Do you know what the exam entails?
I don't actually. I'll see if I can find that. But I'll see if I can find that for the next podcast. But I don't actually know what it is. But you do have to sit a written exam, and that gets you your provisional, and that allows you to race anything up to a GT4, which, when you think about it, is quite mental, because GT4 cars are not slow cars. So it appears to be, it's not confirmed, but everybody's, at the time of recording, saying it's confirmed, but it does appear it will be in a Porsche Cayman GT4 for Lion Speed. Now, the rule is that you're to do two races in a GT4 or lower, before, and it's got to be penalty-free. Max might struggle with that. And then you can race a GT3. And he has a GT3 car that's there, Ferrari GT3, which is part of his Verstappen.com racing team. But you can get dispensation after one race to race in the GT3. And not coincidentally, it's an NLS double header this weekend on a Saturday and Sunday. So there is a situation where Max could do a written exam on a Friday, race a Porsche Cayman GT4 on the Saturday. If he doesn't hit anything, and then I imagine he will get dispensation to race a GT3 on the Sunday, which would be quite a busy weekend, given that it's a non-F1 weekend.
Honestly, if I was Max Verstappen, that sounds like a brilliant weekend.
Honestly, that sounds like a brilliant... If I was young enough, rich enough, and talented enough to be a racing driver, I think I would prefer to do the Nürburgring over F1, if I'm honest, because it's just amazing fun. But that is this weekend. There is two races, one on the Saturday, one on the Sunday. I've already had messages, which, Scott, you've seen of, is this in the racing lineup? And it's like, yes, of course it's in the racing lineup. It's a daft question. Everything's in the racing lineup. So that is streamed live in-app, and if you don't know what time it's on, then check the app, because it will be in your time zone with the stream embedded. And then, because of latest updates to both iOS and Android versions of the racing line, you can do full screen video and even picture-in-picture, which doesn't sound fancy, but on an iPhone at least, I don't know what it's like on Android, Neil, you can correct me, the YouTube app normally needs a YouTube premium subscription to be able to do picture-in-picture. But in the racing line, you could do picture-in-picture without a YouTube premium subscription. And the YouTube premium subscription is, I think, 15 times more expensive than a racing line subscription, which means I am 15 times cheaper than YouTube and will link direct to the videos. So just go and subscribe to the Racing Line at £1 a month and get all the videos, picture in picture, on your phone, on your tablet, all that stuff. Yeah.
I have to say, I really, really liked having the app when I was at British Superbikes on Bank Holiday Monday. It just makes it so, so easy.
We had a couple of situations like that at Donington where we're telling other people what time their races are at, which is quite amusing. But we also had that with a TCR UK this weekend who had a small error in their timetable. And I had to point out to the racing series themselves that their timetable was incorrect and they should probably fix that, which to their credit, they did. And then asked me to refresh to make sure it was correct, which I confirmed it was. And I thanked them for the quick communications for that. Because normally when you call a race series on getting things wrong, they don't bother. Neil said there that he enjoyed having it at British Superbikes. That's because the Android version is finally released after a huge amount of time, effort, and frankly, money. The Android version is now built and we're now on version 1.1, I think, as well, which just added full screen video and picture in picture. So now you can get all the race times and all the videos just on your phone, which is great. And on the iOS version, I've added a new screen called the watch screen. It's a tab at the bottom where it's going to start looking a bit like Netflix, where it's got all of your race series across the top that you want to watch. And then the more you scroll down, the more you get recommendations. So you'll get Racing Line athletes. So this weekend we've got Daniela Sutton in the Fiesta Juniors. But then below that, it'll tell you what else is on that you might like based on what you've got selected. So if you watch single-seaters in, I don't know, the UK, it will recommend other single-seaters in the UK. It's not just random stuff. It is based on what you actually watch. And it's all processed on your device as well. I don't send any of your information to the cloud or anything to process it. Anyway. Not that I think your racing series are some sort of privacy invasion, but it's all on your device.
Main question about that feature.
Yeah.
Does it have the Netflix-esque deep bassy drum soundy thing when it opens up?
Oh, that's a brilliant idea. Like a TRL... It's not quite a jingle, is it? It's just like a
chime.
I think it's like an audio ident.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, we need to... Scott, as the musician, this is totally going to be your job. It doesn't have that, but what I have done is just cleaned it up a little bit. So before, loading YouTube videos is a little bit clunky. They always load in oddly because you're essentially loading in iframes, you know, 1999 technology. But now I've put my own video player over the top of it and stuff, so it's a bit smoother and nicer to use. And there's also a link in there because I realize that a lot of YouTube streams are geo-blocked, which is very annoying, for example, if you're American and want to watch IMSA and you can't watch it on YouTube, which is very frustrating. You can get 3 months free off of a VPN by using the link in the Racing Line. Not that I would suggest that you use VPNs to circumnavigate legal stuff, but I don't know. The option is there if you really need to. So, oh, and there's also a catch-up tab. So if you missed a race from last week, for example, you can just select last week and go and watch it last week. So or watch it now rather than watch it last week. You know what I mean?
I think I have an idea for the TRL jingle. Do you want to hear it? Here it goes. The Racing Line.
Was that McDonald's? That was McDonald's.
It was.
Yes.
Please never do that again.
What about one that goes like this? The Racing Line.
It'll be whoever owns the Fleetwood Mac stuff at the moment, I think I would get sued very, very quickly.
Are we getting copyrighted?
Yeah, we are. Okay, maybe watch this
demonetized already. We've not even been monetized yet.
We should probably finish this podcast then.
Well, before we finish off then, some people will see on the subreddit that some features come to iOS before they come to Android on the app. And that is not really an intentional thing. It's just that building an app as an indie developer is very expensive and very time consuming. And I can't actually afford to do both at the same time. It's just simply not possible. So the way it works is because I know enough iOS development to do stuff, I'm not going to call myself an iOS developer because I'm not, but I know enough iOS development to kind of prototype features such as the new watch tab in iOS. And then once I've got it working and ready and enough people have given me feedback on this is how we would like it to be, then I go to my lovely Android contractor who is absolutely brilliant and I pay him an obscene amount of money in order to build it for Android. So that's how it works. That's why iOS stuff comes first. I'm not favoriting it. It's just literally all I could afford. So,
but also you're favoriting it a bit.
Yeah, iOS masterworks here.